Hello and welcome to Power Reflections, a proud member of the Doof Network where we reflect on Wabo's most runaway work as it releases. I'm Ruben Morehouse.
And I'm Elliot Diebold.
And we are coming at you live in the Discord. Hi everyone in the Discord, welcome, welcome.
Hello.
We've got a very special, as we do for our single chapter weeks like this one, we've got a very special activity for those of us in the Discord to participate in. So if you want to be able to participate in our fun special activities, you should join the Discord. Go to doofmedia.com/discord and do that.
You made that sound so gross.
I know. Yeah, we're all having a big orgy. So if you want to be a part of that. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. But for now, let's get into In Absentia 21.12, Lucy chapter. It's a one chapter week. It's a big Lucy chapter. But before we get to the meat of it, we start with a bit of a flashback. The trio is sitting around chit-chatting about just how the moot is going to go and what the purpose of it is and all that jazz. Since Lucy's going to be there by herself, they got a plan what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and I really appreciated that, like, I think before we jumped in, that Wabo did take that step to kind of just, like, redefine some stuff about the judges and the parameters to really make sure we do understand why this moot is working the way it's working. But I thought it was interesting that Lucy very much introduces this with the point that, like, what she's trying to keep in mind is that, like, mission one, the primary responsibility of this is to fuck Charles up. Like, yeah, they talk about other things like how Lucy can ensure she isn't instantly, like, shut down and what the roles of the judges are. And there's, like, a lot of talk about how they can do it well. But, like, something Lucy brings up a few times is that, like, the core thing that she's trying to do here is they really do want to fuck Charles over. And I thought that was kind of fascinating because that strikes me as a growth, one of the examples of, like, growth, because I don't think early story Lucy would have been okay potentially compromising or letting other people get away with bad shit as long as it fucks Charles over in that same way.
Yeah, it's interesting. The fact that they're kind of ready for some points that they're not happy with to be made in the service of fucking with Charles. You're right. I kind of am unsure how to feel about it, right? Like, I guess the whole point of them being in exile right now is that they're choosing to put everything aside in the purpose and pursuit of fucking Charles. So I guess that it tracks with their wider situation. But when you put it like that of, like, how much they're focusing on that as the number one goal, you're right. It's, I don't know, it's interesting. I feel a bit conflicted.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a pretty easy argument to be made that, like, if they have to cop a few compromises, you know, for these four-year terms or whatever, it's like, that sucks. But, like, also, if it helps them get rid of Charles, it's sort of a huge step forward overall. Like, you know, it's just sort of like a little obstacle. And I guess I don't think the early story Lucy kind of would have been able to cope with that. And honestly, based on how it's going, I don't think she's going to need to worry too much.
Yeah, I know, right? Holy fuck.
But yeah, I did think it was like a really interesting Lucy moment for her to be able to say, at the end of the day, I've got to make sure that what I'm fighting for is dicking Charles over kind of primarily. We talked a lot about Verona wearing her Avery hat last week when she was sort of doing those rounds. And Megafire, like, on our Discord, pointed out that Avery raising an army was also her kind of doing her thing while wearing a bit of a Lucy hat. So people were sort of doing their thing but sticking on the hats of the person who assigned them the job too. And so you can kind of see how this is a bit of an instance of, like, Lucy wearing a Verona hat while she's getting ready to fight people, because she sort of is, you know, keeping, like, thinking about the fundamentals, the basics. Like, she comes at them and she's thinking about the judges and how they work overall and using that to form her strategy. And that's, like, a very Verona-y way to sort of approach this problem. But also, it's still very much Lucy under that Verona hat, because she's there to kick off and take names.
Yeah, you're right. The alternate hats instead of alternate masks. I like it. It's a good way of a good framing.
Yeah. As Velikdol points out in our chats, next arc we'll start trading capes and it'll be all these things will be transferred. But yeah, so I guess the crux of this section is really this conversation about the judges, and it's like, I definitely think kind of needed this. Like, there's a lot of points being brought up here that just hadn't been discussed for so long in the story. They definitely slipped my mind. Like the focus Lucy really brings in this chapter to the idea that, wait, reminding us, the judges are meant to be
like a last resort kind of thing.
Like, in some ways they can be outranked by anyone, but also not really, but kind of like it is this very blurry sort of thing where it's kind of like who says what, but like, I really liked this implication. I guess we've been hearing for most of the story how practitioners aren't doing their jobs and they're not really doing what the seal kind of intended practitioners to do. And we've seen things like aware and witch hunters be wrinkles that are forming because of that imbalance. But I'd never really considered how much the judges played a part of that. And that's what Lucy's essentially bringing up here. Like, these wrinkles, the practitioners not doing their job. It's letting shit fall down to the judges, which allows... like, there's a world where if everything's stable, the judges kind of aren't really very important, and that's just not the world they're in. But Lucy's like, we can try and make that world.
Yeah. They're overstepping their bounds, and it's time for them to be put back in their place, effectively.
Yeah.
When I put it like that, it sounds a bit rough, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say overstepping their bounds so much as like they like, because I think Lucy's point is almost everyone gave them this slack, like they're the sort of point of last resort, and it's like a sieve, right? And it's like everyone's just let everything fall through, as opposed to like, you know, putting something over it so stuff can't fall through. So it's like you can rein them in just by doing everyone else doing the job, which is kind of actually the intent, if you think about it. It's just the judges have done a good job of distracting us from that being the way it's meant to be. It reminded me, this conversation reminded me of that moment. I think it was in 7.x where Alexander talked about how the practice in Canada was still very much like the Wild West. And, you know, that comes back to all that stuff about wrinkles and stuff we're talking about. But it's just like, yeah, it really... Alexander just being like, yeah, it's like the Wild West out here, really speaks to how much the practitioners did not recognize all these gaps they were leaving and all the powers they were unintentionally giving to the judges.
Yeah. It's a good point. Yeah. It is a mirror of that conversation, I suppose. I really love the way Lucy frames it later on in this chapter of like, the Carmine is this representation that there's always a bigger fish. There's always a bigger predator. And, yeah. But like that, the practitioners don't think that way anymore. They're too settled to even kind of worry about what that practically means, I guess.
Yeah. And it's why it feels like Lucy kind of inventing combat democracy later in this chapter feels like it should be a really big hit to Charles, because Lucy's just reframing it as like, well, now even the powerful should fear, you know, the general population again.
Yes.
Which is sort of, yeah, just the obvious to a 21st century Western person way of that working.
Okay, quick shout out to that Garrick who comes in to interrupt them and keeps interrupting them to say that they're going to be interrupted. That's good stuff.
She just doesn't take the hint like at all. And then they kind of have to be like, can you close the door on your way? And she's like, wow, there's no need to be rude.
It's very fun.
Yeah. I just love the Garricks as an institute. Like, you know, I almost treat Jude and even like Cliff and Adoria and people a bit separately, but I love like the Garricks as just like this, as a body, because they're just always a bit stupid.
They are very fun. They're fun practitioners that you can feel good about, you know, rather than practitioners that you can't feel good about because they're doing monster things.
Yeah.
Anywho, we cut ahead to the moot, and the first order of business is, how is this moot actually going to work? And before everyone has even arrived, Grayson and Musa are arguing for voting by status, I guess I would call it, right? While Lucy argues for normal voting like normal people do.
Yeah, basically. Before we get into that, though, I got to call it, this section opens with, like, the first thing that happens is Lucy goes, Miss Wint, you don't, and Anne interrupts her to say, Mrs. Wint, I am married. And that's just so foggy fuddy because Anne's husband comes up a lot in Thunder Bay, and it's always in the context of everyone joking about how he sleeps around and Anne saying, I don't give a fuck about him. So, like, the way she just enters this moot and is like, I have a husband, I'm married, and is like using it as some sort of status symbol. Now I'm just like, she's just such a dumb piece of shit. I love it.
It's, yeah, any opportunity to score a minor point through a correction like that, of course she will take.
Yeah, and she's totally taking advantage of the fact that these people don't know, like, this only works because they don't know who she is. Like, she couldn't really call, if she made this claim in Thunder Bay, it would get instantly drowned into, like, you know, the normal routine around how her husband sleeps around.
Mm.
So it's like, it's always, she always gets away with this because she doesn't fucking matter here.
Yeah. Nobody cares enough to argue with her.
I just thought it was so funny that she's suddenly all high and mighty on her marriage after like every other argument in this story. She's been like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Bringing that Thunder Bay energy to the fore. But yeah, I guess talking about the whole voting setup thing, we'll probably got to talk about it for a bit because it's like, it feels like it's a super important point that's tying back to, you know, stuff Pale's been doing with heavily from the outset. Like, the Canateers were presented by Miss at the start of the story as like a more democratic solution to practitioners, essentially, or more community focused.
Mm.
So I guess it's like you can see like Lucy's taking that energy and bringing it forward here. Like the current way, because what Grayson and Master are arguing for is essentially really just a formalized version of what already currently exists, which is those with the power kind of get to make calls that suit them. Mm. And Lucy is fighting for the system that Miss has kind of instilled in her and the Canateers, which is like, hey, what if we just let normal voting be a thing?
Yeah, it's very cool. Kind of the movement from practitioner feudalism towards like democracy. But the thing that I really like about it is because of magic, these can be like much more pure expressions of what we want them to be, at least on their surface, right? Like, democracy is just the question of, in people's heads, who do they support? And there's no, like, you don't have to vote, there's no opportunity for, you know, voter suppression or gerrymandering or whatever. Like, at least at this point, it's very much, who do you support? They get power. It's just kind of, I don't know, it's very cool in that way. I like it.
It's that sort of thing where, like, the Otherverse has such potential to just be this, like, really smooth sailing utopia if everyone would just stop being cunts. This is the thing, like, you can hold referendums just so easily. And, like, whereas, you know, here in Australia, it costs millions for us to hold referendums on the most basic shit. But it's almost free in the Otherverse. And, that's what Lucy's pushing for here. As people, like, I see Megafire bring it up in the chat, and, like, I was going to mention it too. What's fun though is it's still just a step, because what it is in this context is having the votes just means that you'll fight slightly better, but you still do have to fight for what you're going for, right? So like, there's still the potential for just some billionaire Henniger who can't be beaten to, even if they're not the popular vote, potentially get much more of their way just because they've got power. But it's that shift towards like helping empower the people who at least have the popular vote.
It's a fair point. I mean it's not the be all and end all, but it does feel like it's so significant of a step. I really like it.
I guess going back to Alexander's Wild West sort of analogy again, it feels like the practitioners haven't been accounting for is just they've moved over here and treated it like the Wild West and set up fiefdoms and, like, you know, gotten away with a ton of shit being the rich minority or whatever. Like, they've, in doing so, they have been bringing the seal with them, and the seal is kind of, it was designed to allow for more things like this. Like, you know, it's been twisted and that's not like what it is, but it's kind of like by bringing, I guess, their lawlessness with them, they have been bringing the seal, which then enables people like Lucy to try and twist it into something better, I guess. Like, I'm just thinking of, like, it does remind me of stories you'd hear about early Australia when it was being colonized by the West, and it's sort of like people would get away with shit at first, but usually the people who would get rich doing dodgy shit in early Australia, they would want to solidify that power by building the institutions of law they were sort of familiar with. And those institutions would sort of inevitably like coalesce into what we're familiar with now, which is like much more of like a Westminster, like classic legal system.
Mm.
And there's, I could kind of see the practitioners doing the same thing here.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know. I was reading about this yesterday. the House of, have you ever heard of like the House of Lords works in the UK?
No, I don't think I know. I think it's the kind of thing where I've just heard it and I think, all right, great. I'll one day know how that works.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was looking this up cause I was like thinking about how all the sorts of power, cause I think we talked about it in the distant past, like, there's parallels here to like, you know, Canada sort of freeing its or moving away from being a monarchy to something a bit more democratic. And obviously the Kennedys are leaning hard into that, this arc. I think like Canada, Australia and the US all have that two house system for their legislative branches where you've got like a parliament, like the lower house who are elected by groups of the population. And then you have like the Senate, which each represent like states and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In the UK, they have that lower elected house, but then their upper house, the House of Lords, are just people who are like kind of appointed for life.
Oh, okay.
And so originally it was mostly like cardinals and people from the church, and then like it's called the House of Lords because it was mostly like the rich families.
Right, lots yeah, of yeah, land. Yeah.
And so there are all these systems for how you inherit like a role in the House of Lords. So like if a lord dies, it's like, you know, their son will inherit their position in the government. What? Like that. This got removed, like that part of it got removed in 1999.
Okay, pretty recently.
Shockingly recently. So it's still kind of like appointments for life, but now it's like done by the government, and there's like kind of a, not written in, but I don't know, just like practiced thing of like putting people in based on qualifications. So it's full of a lot of like, people who have, you know, like there's a few scientists in there. There's people who are like, you know, done good. Like, you know, so basically people can like sort of earn their way in. It seems like there's actually a couple of like Olympic athletes in there, which, yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, if they're meant to be there to represent a specific interest, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. So Bellegtal's saying Canadian senators are also appointed. So that's fascinating. Because like here we elect them fairly similarly to the lower house.
Yeah.
Like, because there's comparisons that you can draw here between that sort of House of Lords aesthetic and like what's sort of trying to have what like Miss and the Kennedys are trying to have happen with the practitioners, where it's like, okay, like the House of Lords, this part of the legislative and executive branches, is kind of being run at the moment by a bunch of dynasties that were trying to move that away to like people who are kind of getting put there based on votes and stuff.
And to some Olympic athletes instead, yeah.
Yeah, like Avery.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's very interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I just thought it was wild that it was like, it was like 1990. There was like a 1958 act that like minimized the amount of influence the church, or like how many seats the church had. Then it really wasn't until 1999 they completely got rid of like a lot of it's just inherited by rich dynasties and stuff. And I was like, that's... I was so like, crazy. I was born then. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, England, what a funny place you are.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, people are posting stuff about the Senate in Canada, and it is a lot more like that House of Lords. Crazy. So yeah, there's probably more parallels. Somebody who's actually good at political science and stuff could probably write something great talking about how that relates to Pale.
Yeah. Yeah. Lucy is kind of cornered into a duel, but manages to turn it into a 2v2. Musa and Grayson are up against Lucy, who recruits Anthem for her partner. And the stage is set for a duel.
This is so fucking hype. Like, I wish I had like MLB sounds to play right now. That's the feeling going into this. Is it's just like, fucking, I've forgiven Anthem for all his murders. Like, Miss is just being, Miss is just being unfair about it. He's good now. He's fixed. Problem solved.
Well, yeah. I mean, he does seem to be somewhat reformed, which is pretty great. He has that line, what is it, like, I mistook the feeling of triumph for that we were doing good, kind of.
Oh, so good.
Good stuff. But yeah, Wildbo joked, this was step one towards the Anthem and Jasmine ship, and I am very on board for that. This is great.
I didn't see that. I would have latched onto that. Like, yeah. it's happening, everyone. It was a joke, but now it's dead serious.
It's confirmed,
I think there's a bunch of stuff I want to talk about here, but I guess before we get into it, I do love the bit where, like, Lucy instinctively turns to Guillaume for this, but also in the back of her head, she is a lot like, Guillaume already lost to Grayson. And yeah, I love how Guillaume is like, oh, is that like the sparkle I see in Anthem's eyes? And even Anthem's like, come on, man, you're just like, you're clearly just trying to suggest
you're
that I'm
making
like,
that sparkle.
I just love Guillaume's fucking toxic masculinity. He's like, he can't say he's not up for it. So he manages to do that, but do it in a way where it's like, well, Anthem would probably love to do it.
Yeah. I would love to, but I can't take it away from Anthem. Anthem seems like he's so keen.
It's like, yeah, okay, whatever, mate. But yeah, even Anthem's like, yeah, sure. Like, the way Anthem was even helping Lucy right from the get-go, like, there's bits earlier in this where we didn't talk about it, but, like, I love how he just gets Lucy so much. Now he just starts whispering from, like, the other side of the place, knowing Lucy can hear him. Like, he's just, like, offering her advice right from the get-go. She, like, starts talking to Grace, and he's like, don't do it. Don't, like, he's fucking good at this. Don't do it. And knowing she can hear him, like, yeah, it's great.
Mm. Yeah, it's good stuff.
And then I love the moment as it's getting started where Lucy expresses the idea of maybe a 2v2 would make sense, and Charles is just kind of instantly like, 2v2, let's do it, let's go, because it lets him drag Musser in, and Lucy quite quickly realizes, oh, this has turned into a win-win for Charles, because either I win and fuck up the Mussers and the Hennigers, which he loves, or they win and power stays concentrated, which really serves Charles, and I don't know why Henniger and Musser are fighting for that. But like, it's the classic Pale thing of where we've got three sides to this fight, and the other sides are always trying to make the other two do all the fighting so that they can swoop in at the last minute. And like, Charles is just in the position to be that person this time.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. The bit of, you know, Grayson and Musser sucking up to Charles, it made me a little bit worried for a second, but then of course Grayson and Musser is everything that Charles hates, so it is kind of this arrogance from their side to be like, yes, we're big and powerful, and so we have decided we'll let you be on our team, Charles, what do you think about that? And he's just like, fuck off. It's so good.
I think Lucy phrased it perfectly where she's like, man, if Charles had gone along with this, like, I wouldn't have been flabbergasted.
But yeah, he is a big, like, hypocrite, but he's not that big of a hypocrite.
Yeah,
luckily.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, if I'd missed some data and it turns out he was willing to do that, it'd sort of be like, not the end of the world, but it was like, you the betting money was on him telling Musser and Grayson to go fuck themselves, and he did.
Yeah.
I guess speaking of Grayson, like, as we're getting ready for the fight, Grayson has that great moment where he's trying to compliment Lucy, but he can't, like, he has to not actually compliment her. So he has that line where he sort of says, my impression is you three girls inherited a great deal of power when you decided to whore out your services for the others of this nothing town. And there was just like a few lines like that. And I was like, I love when a baddie just lets me
hate them. Yeah.
We're going into this fight and I'm like, Lucy's going to do all sorts of awful things to you and I'm not going to feel bad at all. And I love that. Like, thank you, Grace, for giving me the opportunity to revel in the bad things that are about to happen to you.
Yes. I also really like, there's a moment for Raquel to give Lucy some little bits of goss, as well as effectively giving her permission to beat the shit out of Muscle Senior, which is fun.
Yeah, Lucy's like, do we hate this guy? And Raquel's like, oh, absolutely.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah, we do. Yeah. It's good stuff. So, yeah, the duel begins and it rules. Lucy and Anthem are on the back foot for a bit, but eventually Lucy is given just one opportunity and uses it to completely dominate everybody and win.
Yeah, there are times, especially following along with Pale in comparison, where I sometimes go, man, Pact really owned action scenes. Like, it had so many and there was such diversity and they're really cool. And then, like, because Pale has more to it, sometimes I just forget how fucking good Pale is at it too. And then you get ones like this and I'm just like, holy shit, like, this was so good. Like, it just blew me the fuck away. Lucy mentions the claustrophobia here, and you really feel it, like the smoke keeps taking over the arena, and also everyone's calling more people in, and you're just like, this is so fucking gnarly. Like, it reminded me a little bit of that Battle of the Bastards bit from Game of Thrones, where Jon Snow starts like drowning in bodies, or it's like, it doesn't get that bad, but it's just like, there's just so much.
Yeah, there's a lot here, isn't it? It's great. Just the vibe of feeling the tide turn in this battle is so, so satisfying, right? Like, as soon as Lucy gets a moment to start taking over the arena with her smoke and fire, and you feel the arena just become hers, and it's kind of over so quickly from there, it's so wonderful.
Yeah, I love, she just needs that, like, she's like, Anthem, you just got to cover me long enough for me to lay the seeds. And I could do this. And he's like, yeah, okay. And yeah, like, she manages to do it. And I love, because something that, like, I'm sure jumps out to a lot of people pretty immediately is that, like, Musa's main object that really has an impact on this fight is the like, corruptive smoke thing that he has. And I think that, like, that jumps out to you right at the start, because you're like, hey, smoke is Lucy's thing, and he's this guy rocking, like, a thing that corrupts other smoke and kind of makes it his and takes over it. And you're like, well, that, like, you know, it's very symbolic, but also really fucks Lucy right over, because throwing smoke everywhere is kind of her jam. And so I love it's like this warfare, I guess, yeah, like, owning the sort of battlefield, and Lucy just needs to last long enough to where she can suck the oxygen out. And ultimately it's the same thing Musa is using that fucks him over. Like, he's helping to fill this place with smoke, and Lucy eventually turns that on him.
Yeah, yeah. It's so good. It's just so good.
Also, so, like, obviously Anthem fucking rules here. Like, he's great. Did he remind you of John as well in this fight? Like, the way Lucy described what he was doing and how he was fighting reminded me a lot of how she used to describe John when they were in fights together. Obviously just feeding, you know, all of my, like, Anthem's going to be her new dad energy. But, yeah, I don't know, just this dude who's real good at walking around with a pistol fight and like, sword and shit, fighting big monsters and stuff. I was just like, big John energy from Anthem.
Yeah. I see what you mean, for sure. Even the way that Lucy would describe fighting alongside John, or grandfather, I suppose, as well, of, like, them pulling out their gun, doing some shooting, buying her space to do more tricks. Like, it's very similar, isn't it?
Yeah, but I guess, like, with the other dogs, it really does feel like Lucy is kind of their general. Like, she just has a different relationship with them, whereas, like, the way she treats Anthem and, like, their sort of dynamic, the relationship there is much closer to what she had with John, where, like, Anthem is kind of the expert, but also lets Lucy do, like, Lucy's the brains, kind of. Like, John was very good and understand the practice and way be the fights, but he needed Lucy to be the one who could kind of actually seal the win a lot of the time. And I guess, like, yeah, like, obviously it's the same here.
Yeah it's just a very cool fight.
yeah the other thing I really wanted to talk about was one thing I really liked here is, like, Lucy's thing has kind of always been that she listens, right? Like, obviously that was established very heavily during her implement ritual. And the thing that really defines this fight is that she's solidifying that, like, when she's a combatant, her role is to, like, silence bad faith, like, actors. Like, it's kind of like Lucy listens, she hears what you're saying, and then if it's toxic bullshit, she's going to take away your ability to spout it. Like, the first thing I'm thinking of is, like, Abraham Sr. obviously has his bell and he keeps ringing it weakens practice. And so she uses a silencer to stop it from working the second time. But I feel like the core of this thought was like Grayson, because like Grayson and the Hennigers, literally their power is they keep screaming, and that means you can't shut them up and beat them. Like they're like the worst form of toxic discourse, because they just keep yelling and keep fighting, and then they win because they just won't go down. And so, yeah, basically, if you can't shut him up, you can't beat him. And so Lucy just literally starves him of oxygen, and then he can't scream, and so then he's died. Wait, it's a great barely metaphor.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. It is. It's good stuff. There's a great Rid Tom in chat called out Grayson does nothing new, just what his family does when they kept getting their asses kicked. And I just love that.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, he does do it better. I think that's the thing, because I think a lot of them, we've seen them fall down pretty quickly after.
Yes.
Like, they kind of scream for a bit and then they get tired, whereas, like, Grayson seems to defined because he doesn't go down.
He does it better, for sure, but it's just, like, the same thing, you know? Yeah, whereas Lucy's pulling out this thing that is, like, a new twist on what she's done before. I don't know. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know. I guess just like Grayson is here. He's the face of this movement for like, you know, votes should be based on how like rich and powerful you are.
Mm.
And so he's spouting bullshit outside the duel, and then in the duel, he's also spouting bullshit. And Lucy sort of uses her ability to suck the oxygen out of the room, so he can't spout his bullshit in either place.
Mm. Yeah.
That said, he does break the pointy bit off of the weapon ring.
Yeah.
Which is devastating. Like, I've grown attached to that thing. We've been following its adventures for two and a half years now.
Yeah.
Like, and it's on her list of, like, John bits. Like, when Lucy has the fox that is her, it's the one that has Yolda's stuff and the weapon ring. And it was, like, the first thing John gave her. Like, yeah, that shit better be fixable.
Yeah. Is it like, how broken is it, do you think?
Hopefully not that broke. Like, I don't know. It'd be cool if there was like some new thing, like if it's not fixable, but it's like, I don't know, the weapons come out broke. I mean, who'd want a broken sword though? You can do anything useful with a broken sword, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, a broken sword would never be useful to anybody, would it?
No.
There's no way you could make that work. Yeah. But yeah, so Lucy claims the battlefield and wins the duel. And as she prepares for the next phase of the sword moot, she wonders, how are things going at the Aurum Challenge?
And I want to call out, I was a little upset. We don't see or hear from Grayson or Musa in the rest of this chapter, which was a shame because I really did want front row seats to watching them licking their wounds after this.
Like, yeah, I know, right?
Like, you know, they've essentially called out Anthem for going soy boy, and Lucy's a 14-year-old girl. So, like, how they're, especially Grayson, like, how's his ego doing after losing to them, you know?
I know. It's so good. Fuck's sake. It's so wonderful. And, like, the tonal shift, right? Like, from the start of the chapter where Anne is just, like, bickering with her to the end of the chapter where she's just kind of claimed her spot as the big dog, I guess. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I do love this moment where Lucy, like, she almost seems a bit caught off guard that she's like, oh shit, everyone's looking at me.
Yeah.
And then like Anthem is waiting to take her cue, and she's a bit like, oh gosh, it's all on me now, like, oh, I'm not ready for this. And I was like, it's a bit like, Lucy, like, you organized this meeting, you just beast-moded the patriarchs of the Henniger and the Musa families. Like, a fucking course you're taking the lead right now? Like,
yeah.
This is approaching Avery levels of ditziness. Like Lucy's blind spot for her own soft power is just, like, approaching Avery levels of obliviousness.
Yeah. Grayson ranked her as in the top 10 of people here. Is she number one? Like, who would go against Lucy now? Would could anybody? You know what I mean?
I mean, she's still healing from a... I feel like, sure, you know, if Lucy is still under threat, it's going to be because, you know, there's like 10 more Hennigers or whatever's lined up. Like, you know, what if Easton comes at her now, you know? But yeah, like, I... It feels like she's pretty firmly established here that, like, if you want to beat her, it's going to have to be through, like, 20 people doing it, like, individually. She should be fine.
Yeah.
Because it feels like it's got to be all downhill from here. Like beating Musa and the main Henniger.
Yeah.
That's they the were top the big tier, dogs, right?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, other than Easton Sonjate, of course.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to see Easton have a crack. It's just, you know, that's the classic self-coup.
Mm. Yeah.
Wobbo was bringing up that, like, Lucy's thing isn't obliviousness. Like, it's just, it's about who Lucy is. And, like, I do get that. Like, Lucy's whole thing is kind of, like, she hates a lot of the way that soft power works, and she doesn't think like her whole thing is she's trying to make people stop working like that. So I get it. But it is just funny that it's funny when she doesn't see it. Yeah. Sorry, I did want to shout out Megafire's essay that was on the Parahuman subreddit yesterday for us here at least. It went into a lot of cool details on, like, the coup and claim and, like, how that was all shifting in this duel, because something we haven't talked about enough is, like, Grayson and Lucy set up that their rules will apply based on how the duel is going, because they're fighting for, like, how the rules should work for Karma. So, like, as one of them starts winning, the other person, or their rule starts to take more of an effect. And Megafire did a really cool job kind of talking about the context of that, why people are into it, or what each person is getting out of it, and, like, how it sort of worked through the fight. And that was great. I'll try to link it in the Reddit thread if I remember. Yeah,
link it in the thread, which you can find linked in the show notes down below. Just saying.
Also, this is, like, a minor thing, just like a parallel. I don't really have, like, any message to draw from it, but, like, we talked about Lucy wearing her Verona hat here, and something that gets called out is obviously, like, Lucy did kind of do a bit of a dick move on Anthem by partially suffocating and burning him. Like, he's cool with
it. Like, yeah, it was all in service of the, you know, of the mission.
He gets it. I'm not saying, like, you know, America seemed a bit upset, but he seemingly shut that down. That's fine. But it did remind me of the time Verona kind of did the same thing to Matt in the hospital in the Undercity. I think it was, like, in arc 15 or 14, where Verona had her anti-air runes, and she was, like, dropping, or maybe bottles. Yeah, it was bottles, like, of alchemy stuff. But she would, like, suck all the air out, and she kind of didn't tell Matt that that's what she was going to do. And it was a bit of, like, a dick move. And so I just thought it was interesting that there's a bit of a parallel there. But Lucy's seems to have gone better.
It's a good connection to draw out. Lucy's pulled a Verona move, but done it just, you know, a bit better.
Yeah. She's more, yeah. I think her and Anthem, she talks a lot in this fight about how she's, like, signaling with her body, like, what she's doing to help her teammates get it and all that sort of stuff, which is just, like, yeah, one of those really cool details. Like, I'm unsure how Wobbo tracks all this shit as he's riding.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the moot's going pretty well. It seems like we're going to be cutting across to the Aurum contest next.
Yeah, the way this chapter ends is it's basically Lucy thinking, well, this is going pretty well. I hope they're doing all right in the Aurum contest, which just feels like a cutaway to all hell breaking loose at the Aurum contest, right? Like, I thought the Aurum contest was probably going to be the easier one coming into this, but the way this chapter ends makes me think that's probably not going to be the case now.
Yeah. Just so much good shit going on at the moment, you know? You can't, there's too much of it.
Well, the thing Lucy calls out in this, like, chapter is, like, Charles doesn't seem as bothered as we'd expect. And, like, the Aurum challenge was presumably the part of this he could have prepared for. Like, I still would expect he's got moves of his own that are outside of that, but, like, it wouldn't be a huge logical leap for him to be like, well, they're going to go after the other judges next. So the Aurum challenge feels like something he should be prepared for. So now I'm thinking maybe we'll see, like, some of the other Negateers or Risica showing up to that. So maybe that... Maybe the Aurum won't be the challenge in the Aurum challenge. Like, maybe it'll actually be dealing with whatever Charles has sent there.
Yeah, maybe. hard to predict. I've given up on predicting how these things are going to go.
Yeah, that's. I guess I'm partially just thinking from like a meta perspective. Wabo doesn't like to repeat stuff. Like it's a scene where when we're cycling through three judges, each one is going to feel very different. Like that's just the way these stories always tend to work. So it's like there will be something about the Aurum challenge that makes it feel very distinct from the Alabaster one, and I guess outside interference being a key part would fit that bill. Another thought I actually had that I wanted to bring up was I was thinking about Gillette because of the meme we posted on Twitter today.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, I wonder how okay, so because Gillette was like made to kind of replace Verona.
Yeah.
And now she kind of is she's presumably been Civi Verona for like a long time now. So I get there's so much that we need to see coming back into Kennet and what's gone down there and like how bad it is.
Mm.
But I'm actually really excited on the side to see like
how Gillette is doing.
Yeah, like you know, because part of it was like she's volunteered to do like some of the Brett facing time. In the past because it's like she's a little bit better at handing it than, you know, Verona original. But I imagine, like, what's it been? Apparently 2 to 3 days, according to chat. It's like, how does 2 to 3 days of being Brett-facing, like, how quickly has she been worn down?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. Well, hopefully we'll get a chance to see how she's done soon. Yeah, but that's the end of our chapter for this week. So next up on our little agenda here, Elliot, it's time to dive into some predictions / comments that have been left by the community. And this is maybe not normally what we would do for these predictions, but I want to pull out Lapsed Classicist's prediction. I'm just going to read it verbatim. At the moot, Lucy will have an assist against people she can't beat on her own by Anthem, especially against Grayson, who is the bad War Mage dad to Anthem's good War Mage dad. And this was about a week and a half ago, so I just kind of wanted to call it out, being like, hey, Lapsed, well done.
Nailed it.
Well played.
It's not often we get to call out a prediction that's just already become exactly right.
Immediately correct, yeah. It's very good.
And then I've brought a Reddit comment from Jamadric. Mm-hmm. So this was just like in the Reddit thread for the chapter. And they called out a moment that we didn't bring up in our notes, which is that bit where Anthem opens the fight by shooting Grayson in like all the chakra points from the self and soul, kind of ending in the woohoo. And it's the seventh shot from a 6-shot gun because that's one of Anthem's magic gun abilities. And it's just like, G Magic describes it as, talk about a way to say to the spirits, no, seriously, I really killed this guy in all the ways you can kill a guy. Like just shooting all the bits of his chakras ending in his dick, especially after their homoerotic conversation going into it. Like, yeah. I did really enjoy the imagery from that, and we almost missed calling it out. So I was glad this Reddit comment was there.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Very good. Great stuff. So thanks everyone for contributing. If you want to leave your comments in the Reddit thread, or you can also find our Pale Predictor sheet if you want to leave us some predictions about what you think is going to happen next in the story. But speaking of that Reddit thread, we always run our discussion questions in there, and we had one last week, which was, what type of small and benign business would you run for practitioners, you know, like the Garrick convenience store? I really liked a lot of these. I think my favorite one, Elliot, was from Landis963, who was a kind of maybe this blurs the line a bit, but a taxi or courier service that just uses some light city magic to be really quick and effective at taking people to places. I think that's just great. It is using magic, but for a kind of non-magical purpose. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, especially because when you, my understanding of the way this sort of thing works is like, if you're in a city, like say you're really hot shit in Toronto, so you can access city magic to zip around and all that, but like somebody visiting the city or somebody new kind of can't. So like, it's a great way to extort like tourists.
And not just that, but like the more you become known for being better at it, at navigating, the presumably the more power would feed into you. And makes me wonder if, like, you know how London cabbies have to do their tests on the knowledge and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It actually makes me wonder if they're like a light version of aware cab drivers being so like, you know, London cabbies, I guess, are like renowned for that ability to navigate in London. So I wonder if there's a like a version of aware that are just good taxi drivers.
Well, no, but it'd be like I guess I'm picturing an aware who like is ironically unaware of the fact that the city always aligns things, so it kind of works. They always sit in the right lane.
Their traffic lights are always green. You know,
they sometimes skip a block without noticing.
Well, yeah, sometimes side routes open up where they're like, "Oh, I didn't know that was there, but they'll cut me through to the next street over." Blah blah blah. Like, I think that would just be so cool.
Exactly. Kind of like Kingsman from Unsleeping City, basically, who's the king of city magic.
Yes, yes, sure.
I really liked Beard of Valor's answer, which was this, like, essentially the immaterial version of the Garrix thing. So, like, selling immaterial sustenance. So there was, like, talk of different zones. There might be, like, zones that act as kind of hallows. There'd be, like, a fire for you to get, like, warmth, like, that sort of thing. And it really gave me Dark Souls vibes of, like, the peaceful parts of Dark Souls. Like, you know how all the shops are really just on the side of the road and it's like a dude standing next to fire and you can kind of talk to them and they have all this really weird esoteric stuff. Like, that's what I was viewing. Like, Beard of Valor is like, it's like a garden next to like a very small little chapel and it's divided up into zones where you can get all these sorts of immaterial sustenance. I really enjoyed the imagery of picturing it.
Yeah, I like that. I like that thought. I really liked Captain Rhino's answer, which was like, you know, all these practitioners have very old tomes. Somebody needs to be in the business of like repairing and bookbinding and doing all this stuff, right? There's probably a huge business for, well, Captain Rhino talks about actually printing and making magic books, but even just like repairing and kind of ensuring that they don't fall apart, I feel like is probably pretty important. And you wouldn't necessarily want a muggle, a nomad to do that for you, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah, I can totally see. Also, like, as a family grows, like, if they want a copy of a book because it's deteriorating or, you know, the family's growing and want one copy but they don't want it mass-produced, I can see wanting to hire someone to kind of use magic or by hand to kind of replicate it.
Yeah, because you wouldn't – I don't think you would want to give it to a can't spell because they would – like, there's potential for things to go wrong there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Although I guess to some degree you'd want it to be an aware on this, because I'm thinking if there are like certain diagrams and stuff in there, you don't want if it's a book on runes, you don't want a practitioner drawing those runes and setting them off. I don't know. Yeah, like it'd be one of those things. I could see it being like a practitioner therapist or a practitioner lawyer where there'd have to be some agreement to use the information in the books.
Yeah, true. Or maybe the payment is like, yeah, I'll just copy down part of it, you know. I mean, probably that you wouldn't be keen on that. Maybe you'd prefer, yes, we swear we will never use this information kind of vibes.
A very similar answer was Beleg Tal's, where basically they wanted to run like a magical stationery shop. So they're like, every practitioner needs like paper, notebooks, cards, ink, chalk, etc. So it seems like if you had special, like, if you're the, and I guess, yeah, like I can see the logic. If you're the place with the like waterproof good magic chalk or something, like you could probably start to have some pretty good margins and target like practitioners. I don't know, like, especially like there's got to be a whole lot of stationery that like practitioners would be interested in that normal innocent people wouldn't, like fucking old as shit scrolls that you can write on, like binders made from human skin, extra durable rune paper. Like, maybe you can get like your rune decks laminated there, and they have like a special laminator which doesn't set the runes off or something.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like teacher supplies, right? You don't want, if you want to go and get ink and chalk, you don't want to have like kids' pavement chalk. You want professional grade chalk.
But yeah, I can totally see there being a special shop for practitioner tier stationery that, they charge 10 times as much as Office Works, but it's because it has this one niche thing that is helpful for practitioners.
Yeah, for sure.
What else do we like? Oh yeah, Hobo Demon's answer was a notarizing app. So an app where practitioners can be, you know, signed up to be notaries and then serve the community by notarizing things for karma / money.
Yeah, yeah, basically a way to kind of give them more of an innocent like cover story too, and like tie them into the community a bit. A very short one I wanted to call out, Dominical Days, basically just wants to be Cheryl from Pate.
And we all do. It would be very fun.
Just traveling to all these neat realms and writing about them. I think Pate may have undersold how dangerous certain aspects of that job are, but like definitely when it's good, it seems great.
Yeah. And Glass clearly talked about a butcher practitioner family that run a, you know, innocent butcher shop, but then also as their kind of practitioner side business can butcher others, bring them in, break them down for component parts and sell those back to you. Effectively like a scrapyard for others, yeah. I guess, which is a bit horrifying, but you know.
I would want very strict measures on what they are willing to take apart.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the tie into the butchers and the scrapyard too.
Yeah.
Horrifying, but also I do see it.
Yeah. So thank you everyone for leaving your discussion question answers, and of course we've got a new discussion question that we are running this week, and that discussion question is, what agenda item would you bring to the moot? Is there anything big that you would propose that the Kentiers might have missed?
Yeah, so you know, now that Lucy's got the ball rolling and Hennigers and Mosses are out, so it's basically free game to say whatever you want, what is like the thing you would bring? When Lucy turns to you and it's your turn to suggest a new rule, what are you bringing?
Have you got one that you would suggest, Elliot?
Oh, shit. Because if it's in the context of this moot, it has to be, like, combat-focused, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. We need to get it so that, like, dueling... Like, I want to see more aggro sports.
Like full contact... Yeah. You know, dunks get ball or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like it counts as a duel if you play like basketball, but like anything like that Mario Smash football game where there's no ref, so you can like push people into the electric fence and stuff.
Yeah,
like we just start to formalize that so they could be team games.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, actually, good point. That is just ice hockey, isn't it? I guess just ice hockey as a combat thing needs to be formalized. It's basically already there.
Yeah. I would introduce.
Do you think Hennigers play ice hockey? Sorry, they must, right?
I would introduce a rule normalizing and standardizing the rules for scissors, paper, rock as an alternate means of combat duels. something like that, maybe, or like maybe thumb wrestling or arm wrestling. I think it would be really fun to see a really intense practitioner thumb wrestle.
You know, let's bring the discourse on whether esports are real sports to this moot. Can you combat duel someone in League of Legends?
Yeah. For sure. Anyway. So, yeah, leave your answers on what agenda items you would bring to the moot in our discussion thread, which you can find linked in the show notes down below. Now, Elliot, at this point of our notes, it just says no Rubens.
Yes. We're going to do another one of these little... bonusy things because it's one of our one chapter weeks. So now I've prepared a game show to torture Ruben with.
Hell yeah. What do you got for me?
Well, so something that came up this week is that a good judge is able to like stack the regions so they get power, right? Mm-hmm. So like something Lucy brings up is like Charles is doing what he can to keep the practitioners distracted so that they keep not addressing things so that things keep falling on his lap and he gets more power because of it, right? Like,
yeah.
Whereas Lucy's trying to unionize all the combat practitioners and then nothing will fall on Charles's lap. So I want to test your ability as a new judge to basically keep all the practitioners in your realm divided and infighting so that you can get more power.
Okay.
So basically the practitioners in this case are going to be our chat here. Mm-hmm. So I've prepared a series of questions. There's two kinds of questions here. The first type, which we'll just do the first one now. So basically, Ruben, you need to fill in the blank, and your goal is to get the vote split as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone in the chat will be voting. Just let me get the poll thing ready. Let's give this a shot. So I'll just start reading out the question, Ruben. Do you just want to say your blank part as I get there?
I guess some of these, you sent me some of these beforehand, or these yes. questions beforehand. Some of them are pretty tough, Elliot, and I maybe need additional context.
Okay. Let's see. Yeah, I admit I'm not super confident this whole bit's going to work. So if this is a flop, and if you're listening to the edited version of this, and you're noticing there's only 2 minutes left in the episode, it's because it didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll just start with the first one, right? So basically, you need to enter a 2-on-2 combat duel. Your partner will be. And then this is the part blank. Where you fill it in. Yep. And then, yep. So then the question we propose to the audience is, are you the better fighter?
But so we don't know who we're against at this point, but am I the better fighter against?
Oh, in your team. Sorry. Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. I missed that. So I want to pick somebody that I, or the, you know, everyone in chat feels like they're about equal to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Well, this is tough because obviously I'm not a practitioner, so I'm I don't rate myself super highly. What are the names of the Oni practitioners again?
Oh, one of them's called Stain or Who's Stein.
Stein, yeah. Oh, let's go with Stein. I think I'm about equal to Stein in terms of combat ability.
Okay.
So the question for chat is, yeah. Are you better or worse than Stein?
In your team with Stein, yeah.
Are you better than Stein? Oh, shit. Oh, come on, folks. Oh, no.
Wow, people really rate Stein.
People stand Stein. I think as yourself, Mirth. As yourself.
Yes. Wait, which is more insulting? Yeah, if everyone thinks you right?
What does that mean? Damn.
Okay, sorry.
Score.
I forgot to start my timer. That's probably been about 30 seconds.
Yeah, whatever.
So that's a score of 6.
I could throw a knife. It's catching a knife. That's the hard part. Anyone could throw a knife.
Now, Ruben, you're not allowed to look at chat for this next part. I think you gotta.
I've got chat. I'll put.
So now this is a question, because the other side of this, as well as being able to pit everyone against each other, you need to kind of know. You need to be able to read the room, right? Like a good judge can sort of tell what everyone's thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
So now I'm about to present a question to chat, and you need to predict what the popular answer is going to be.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
So we'll start with a pretty simple one, pretty straightforward. Everyone's probably expecting this, and that is, like, who is the best Kenneteer?
Oh, shit. Well, I've seen polls on the subreddit before. And normally people go for, I think, Avery, usually. We did just have a pretty badass Lucy chapter, though. Verona, obviously, is not the correct answer, so don't need to worry about that. I'm going to go with people will say Avery.
I'm very sorry. It's close. It's admittedly very close, but Verona has just won out.
No, she hasn't. Come on. Yes, Verona's not the right answer.
That's Verona got ridiculous. 7 and the other two got 6.
Oh, yeah. Well, fair enough.
We did also get a lot of write-ins for Snowdrop, which do not count. She's not even a practitioner, you guys.
Yes, so she has no humanity or agency.
She's not worth
anything,
right?
Yeah, worthless.
Okay, so moving back to one of the questions where it's your job to split the room, Ruben.
Yeah.
That is the name of the game that I stole these from. Okay, so the question for everybody in the chat is, someone is giving you the chance to awaken, but mm-hmm. only if you pick Ruben.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah. Well, I need to talk through it a bit more.
Someone is giving you the chance to awaken, but only if you pick blank as your practitioner specialty. Do you awaken?
This is such a... I really struggled with this one. A practitioner specialty that people would be like, torn on, you know what I mean?
I have an idea for this one, so I'm interested to see, because I feel like I have an easy answer for this.
I think my answer would be goblin king / queening, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, goblining. Okay. Feels like some people would be into it, some people wouldn't, and that would be about 50-50.
Okay, so yeah, well, I've chucked the poll in chat now. So yeah, I guess the question for everyone is if you
being left to awaken, bad at this game. But that's the problem is as well, like, I reckon it's 50-50 on people would even pick Awakening in general. So maybe I should have picked one that was really good.
Well, I was thinking Finding would have been my answer for this one.
Interesting.
Because Finding's fucking terrifying. Like, I think it sounds very fun. So I think a lot of people are going to say yes because they're like, Finding's great. Avery's lovely.
Yeah.
But I should have really think about it.
I think I should have just picked a really good, because I think a lot of people wouldn't awaken regardless, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm.
No, I see the logic there.
Anyway, that was a real whiff, even worse than my last one.
Yeah, sorry, that didn't go well. Okay, we're going back to you've got to predict chat's answer. I'm going to keep alternating this. So I'll go off the spin-off of the previous question and to satisfy all these write-in people. This next question is, who is the best Canneteer familiar candidate? So, like, the options being Snowdrop, John, and Gillette.
Snowdrop, John, and Gillette. Well, Gillette's last, obviously. I would pick John, but I fear that Snowdrop is just too popular. So I think I think people will think Snowdrop, even though John is probably the answer that I think is correct.
Yeah, in a fucking landslide, Snowdrop got it. Yeah. I'm not even gonna wait for the timer to finish on this one. There's no coming back.
I'm gonna check how did it go. Oh yeah, wow, Snowdrop's definitely there. And how are people ranking John last? This is crazy.
I mean, he's dead, I suppose. Not much use as a familiar when you're dead.
Still, come on, everyone. Come on. I feel like this is revealing that I'm actually not that. I wouldn't be a good judge.
I mean, I got unmade the last time we did something
true. So. True.
Okay, so the next question. So good news, everyone. You've been searching for a while for a familiar. And now blank has offered to become your familiar. Do you accept their offer?
Mm. This is an interesting one. So the prerequisite to this one is you're already a practitioner. So cancelling out being a practitioner, but you're making a decision. You're looking for a familiar already and somebody has offered and we want it to be 50-50 on whether you accept that offer. Right.
Yeah. So as the audience in this scenario, you have to keep in mind that you are theoretically already a practitioner and you are already looking for a familiar. Yeah. You've been hitting up, trying to come up with a pun on Tinder and other and failing miserably, but
you could do it. Yeah. I'm going to go. So I don't want somebody who's too much of a fan favorite because then they'll get too many yeses, but I also don't want somebody who's like useless because then they'll get too many no's or like too horrible. I'm going to go Killwagon. I think Killwagon is an intermediate between he would be useful. He's a bit rough, so some people will say no, but he's probably also kind of cool, so some people will say yes.
Yeah, okay, I like that. So, yeah, I've chucked the poll in, and I guess do people take Killwagon as a familiar? The chat has also suggested Binder/Binder as the Tinder.
Oh, Binder. I like that.
It's just pretty funny. Works better on text than it does out loud. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. I'm doing better than previously, but I'm still not great.
I'm going to give you some bonus points for this one because I think that's very close for how many votes that, because this one got like twice as many votes as the last one, which I don't know how that works, but. Yeah, I like Killwagon as a pick.
Yeah, he is a boogeyman, which is a bit rough, but he seems kind of chill, you know. So hey, whatever.
Okay, so now again, Ruben, you have to predict chat's answers to this one. This one's probably the stupidest, but also the hardest for you. So we'll just rip that Band-Aid off, get this one done.
Okay.
So this question is, which member of the original Blue Heron killing squad is the most bangable?
The Blue Heron killing squad. Sorry. Yeah,
so that's Bristow, Bristow's Alexander.
People who killed
the Blue Heron.
The most bangable.
Yeah, Bristow, Alexander, Ray, Durisha, Musa, Louisa Crow, and Charles.
It's either Alexander or Durisha. I think I'm going to go... Yeah, Alexander and Durocher definitely are up the top. I feel like
it has to be... So you are correct that they are first and second.
I feel like it has to be Durocher. I think Durocher edges it, but Alexander is definitely up there.
Yeah, no, you are right. And that was not as close as I expected. That I thought that was going to be closer. She more than doubled Alexander's score.
Nice.
So yeah, you definitely got that one. Louisa also only just a smidge behind.
Well, Louisa is, you know, if you're nice playing one. Fuck, marry, kill with Louisa, Louisa's the marry, not the fuck, kill. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But we'll save all the FMK talk for All Packed Up too. I do want to point out that Charles, Massa, Ray, and Bristow all got no votes, which I feel I feel bad for Ray to be lumped in with the other three.
Poor Ray, yeah.
So somebody give Ray a vote real quick because he doesn't deserve that.
That's good stuff.
Okay. Sorry, gosh, where are we up to?
Mm.
Oh, yeah, I like this one. Okay. So, audience members, you've just hit the jackpot. You've bought a Garrick protein bar, and it had a golden ticket in it. So you've won a free trip on the cakewalk, and the Garricks are promising you that if you complete it with them, like it's a guided tour of the cakewalk, and if you do it with them, the boon you will get is blank. Do you go?
So, yeah, this one to me is the boon has to be so good because – nobody's going to pick the cakewalk. Exactly right.
Yeah.
So I have to pick a pretty good boon, and I'm going to say the boon I'm picking is, I'm going to say, you need no sleep you can take like 10 or 20 minute nap and feel as though you've had a full night's rest and everything's all good. You know what I mean?
I like that.
Mm. And when you do take those naps, you fall asleep exactly when you want to.
Cool.
Like full sleep control.
I've thrown that in. I will have that. I had a friend who tried, because apparently there is sort of a thing you can do where you only need to sleep like 3 hours a day. Like if you do it in this really regimented way where you sleep like in like 40 minute increments, like five times a day or something.
Mm.
And my friend tried to do it in college and it just like, it seemed awful.
Yeah. I don't know why that you know, think of that and think, oh, that sounds awful.
Well, I mean, I'm enticed by the idea of having an extra like 5 hours in my day, but not if I feel like shit all the time. And by all accounts, he still felt like shit all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Not worth it.
Now you've managed to split the room 8-10 on this one, which I'm going to count as a win.
Yeah. That's great. That's the best one we've had so far, right? My other best one was 8-12, wasn't it? Something like that.
Yeah. Which I gave you a correct for as well. So
yeah. Nice.
You are, you're just passing at the moment. You did very well. So let's take it to, this one should be fun. This is another one where you got to guess what the audience is thinking. So the poll this time is, who is the best goblin? And I've only given them four options, which is Toad Swallow, Biscuit, Cherry Pop, and Ram Jam.
This is tough because there is a correct answer. It's Toad Swallow, but Toad Swallow is not the flashiest best goblin. You know what I mean? Like,
I honestly, Toad Swallow was the last one I added into this because I forgot he was a goblin for a sec.
Toad Swallow is clearly the correct answer. So Toad, Ram Jam, Biscuit, and Cherry. Is that the guesses, the answers? Okay. I mean, like, Cherry is obviously very popular. Biscuit is, but I don't think we'll win because Biscuit's the worst.
Let's be honest. Biscuit's only in the poll because I wrote it.
Yeah. Ram Jam is also quite popular but doesn't feature as much as, like, Cherry in comparison. So I think I would go Cherry first, even though, yeah, as I say, I think Toad Swallow is the correct answer.
Ruben, I'm so sorry. Cherry got last.
What?
Ram Jam took it.
Ram Jam took it?
Yeah. Biscuit narrowly got second over Toad Swallow's third.
Oh my god.
And then Cherry somehow came in last. Snowdrop is a write in, also technically got second, but again, I'm not counting those votes. She's not a real goblin.
No write in candidates. That's very good. Ram Jam. Wow. I didn't expect Ram Jam to be so popular. I mean, he is great, but you know.
The Ram stands are fierce.
Yeah, true.
And they're wrong. The correct answer was Biscuit. So technically, only five people got that question right.
Okay, but yeah, Ram really won that one.
yeah, it wasn't even close. Okay, so, chat, you have just received a letter, and it turns out that somebody has left you their house in blank place when they've died, but you only get it on the condition that you turn it into your domain. Do you do it?
So again, this is like free real estate somewhere. Like, that is already pretty good. Yes, you have to make it your domain. I guess free real estate, but you make it your domain, kind of cancels out. So I guess I want kind of a neutral place, somewhere that people would probably like to live, but, you know, is a bit conflicted. Sorry to anyone if I pick your place that you like here.
I didn't realize I was setting you up for that. My bad.
I think I want to pick somewhere in Australia, because then people will be unsure of exactly what that means, and that will tend more towards mixed answers. I'm going to say somewhere on the West Coast, not Perth, but like, you know.
Name another city on the West Coast of Australia, Ruben.
I don't know. Let's just say Perth.
Okay, Perth, Australia. So you get a free house in Perth, Australia, but you have to make it your domain. Do you do it?
Yeah. Oh, wait, I can watch chat for this one, can't I?
Sorry, yes, you can, yeah.
Damn, I thought people would... Oh, no, yeah, you have to make it your domain, yeah.
Yes, it has to be a domain. Housing prices in Perth, that's a whole lot to deal with, Beluga. It's been... Well, if you look up data from 2 years ago, it's going to be very different to right now. That place has gone through the ringer.
I'm doing okay here, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the win on that one. Because especially, I think there's a huge bias towards domain being really fucking cool. So I was surprised. I would have gone somewhere a bit more negative.
No, but like somewhere less stable. I don't know. Having to have it as your domain, I think people don't want to be locked down like that.
That's fair. Especially when you haven't really seen the place yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So this is one where you can't read the chat, Ruben. So, and this is a question for the chat. Which major realm has the coolest others? Out of the Abyss, the Fairy, the Warrens, and the Ruins.
The Abyss, the Fairy, the Warrens, and the Ruins. Oh, it's definitely not the Ruins. What's the coolest others? Can we? Yeah. Are we getting any more definition on that?
Nope.
Okay. Abyss.
I will say fairy includes, like, the fairy realms, my understanding, includes fairy with a Y.
Same as
the Warrens is goblins plus things like flesh monglers and stuff. Like, like, there's a broadness. It's not just, like, that's not just asking about fairy and goblins. There's all the
options. Coolest. I mean, I would probably say the correct answer is the... Like, you know, coolest in the kind of traditional sense of stuff that's cool is maybe the Abyss, like the coolest to read about for sure. Coolest in the sense of which would I actually want to be around the most probably is the goblins, so the Warrens. Definitely the Final fairy. Answer. I'm going to say, I just know it's not the Ruins. The Ruins are in no means a cool place. I guess I'll go. I think people will probably pick the Warrens if you have to pick one of those four.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Ruben. I thought you had it for a sec there.
Is it the Abyss?
It's actually a tie between the Abyss and the Fairy.
The Fairy? Nobody wants to spend time around the Fae. What are you talking about?
I mean, well, if you get around the Fairies, though, that could be fun.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. All right. Wow.
Yeah, I think fairy are also cool, even if you don't want to spend time with them.
That's fair.
Like your favorite character in a sitcom, you know? It's like, I'd hate you in real life, but you're fun to watch.
Okay.
Okay, cool. So we're down to the final question each category now.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the final one where you're supplying something to split the room. So, audience, you have been offered an alchemical drink, like one of the alchemical healing potions that will cure your biggest health problem. The only side effect is...
This is a hard one as well, because I guess I have to think about how many people have... How big are the health problems that most of our listeners deal with every day, you know? Like, because that's really going to impact how bad this downside can be. So I could go for something. So actually, here's something interesting. If we assume that most of our audience are Americans, I could say the downside is being saddled with medical debt. And that's probably a no. That's like, you know, because that's just kind of, if that was the case, they already would have, you know, cured their biggest health problem.
Sorry. Yes. The question in chat is, does it include mental health? And to my mind, yes.
Okay, interesting. Curing mental health is a pretty big deal. So maybe people would take medical debt for a cure to mental health.
Also, problems. Ruben, I think I'm getting static through your microphone.
Are you? Hello? Check.
It's like a low level of like static.
Oh, okay. Man, I don't know. This is a hard one. I guess I'm just going to go for something that's kind of annoying and say you have to... It's so difficult. I really don't know.
Sorry, yeah, this was the last. I was like, I need to come up with six, and this was the last one I could come up with, so my apologies.
Cures your biggest health problem, but you have one less finger and toe on each hand / foot. That's what I'm going to say.
Okay, I like it. Okay, cool. I've thrown would that you poll cure to the
your
chat.
Biggest? Yeah. Would you cure your biggest health problem in exchange for one less finger and toe? On each, you know, appendage. Yeah, if you were born with an extra finger or toe, you know, maybe it's an easier decision. Sleeping Beluga asks, can we save the potion? I don't know what that means. Like, save it for later. You have to drink it, I think.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm surprised. I think I did pretty well here.
You've nailed it. I'm giving you a tick for that one. Nine to 10 is very close.
Yeah, that's good. Pianist with ADHD. Oh, Bill, sorry. There you go.
Cool. Okay. So the last, which is the one of these I haven't done? Sorry, I've been going all over the shop in the order. Here. Okay. Nice, easy one to round it out. Ruben, you just need to predict the top answer from the chat. Yep. Chat, the question is, which is the best major ritual, the implement, familiar, or domain?
Implement, familiar, or domain, which is the best? I feel like I think the simplest one is the implement ritual, right? So that's the best in terms of like, you know, anyone can do it. It's like not, it doesn't feel like it's as high stakes as the other ones, I guess. So if you had to do one, implement is the one that people, I think, start with, right? Obviously people love conceptually the idea of a familiar and the idea of a domain as well. Depending on who they are. Implement is not the best one though, because it's like not that interesting, I guess. So I'm going to say...
I will just interject quickly to say this is surprisingly close.
Yeah, I feel like it would be close. I feel like it's down to the type of person you are, you know. Are you a Verona? Are you a Lucy? Are you an Avery? Verona seemed to, for some reason, be people's pick for Kenneteer, which would make me think Domain is the winner by that metric, but... I think I'm going to go with implement. I'm going to say implement just because it's the easiest. Yeah,
with a last minute vote, implement has just won out by one vote over familiar. So, I'll give you that one. Congrats. Nice. So it was very close between implement and familiar. Domain bringing up the rear, bottom tier ritual for an A tier practitioner. But yeah, also congrats, Ruben. I guess
How did I
using
do
my patented spiritual score mechanism, you got 7 out of 12, which is a pass. So you can stay as the judge. You will not be unmade.
I did it. Thanks, everyone. That was great. That was really fun, Elliot. And thanks, everyone, for participating in it.
Yeah, thanks for coming along. That was, hopefully that was fun for everyone. And,
Cool. Well, yeah, thanks, everyone, for joining us. Yeah. As we mentioned before, if you want to leave your answer to our discussion question, what agenda item would you bring? Have the Kenneteers missed anything? You can do that in our discussion thread, which you can find in the show notes down below.
Yes, don't forget as well, we are on Twitter. As long as Twitter's there, I guess we will be too. Yep. We've been posting some memes there. We post, you know, updates there, so it's worth checking
out. Post a meme there every day. Yep. If you want to participate in our future live things that we do when we have one chapter episodes, you can go to doofmedia.com/discord. While you're on the Doof Media website, you can check out all the other great shows on the network.
Yes, don't forget to stop by our Patreon, patreon.com/doofmedia. It's how we're funding All Packed Up 2, which is, you know, preparations are still ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we might be reaching the end of the story soon.
Don't say it,
question
mark. Don't say it. You've cursed us.
I think every time somebody says that, while Bo comes up with a new chapter idea.
Yeah. But anyway, if you want to support Wildbo and all the great work he is doing, you can go to Wildbo's Patreon at patreon.com/Wildbo and support him directly there.
Cool. Well, we'll see you all next week for Jasmine and Anthem's wedding chapter.
Hell yeah.